nourished by the love of independence, the sense of national honour, the presence of danger, and the habit of command. They received laws and governors from the will of their sovereign, and trusted for their defence to a mercenary army. The posterity of their boldest leaders was contented with the rank of citizens and subjects. The most aspiring spirits resorted to the court or standard of the emperors, and the deserted provinces, deprived of political strength or union, insensibly sunk into the languid indifference of private life. The sublime Longinus, who in somewhat a later period, and in the court of a Syrian queen, preserved the spirit of ancient Athens, observes and laments this degeneracy of his contemporaries, which debased their sentiments, enervated their courage, and depressed their talents. In the same manner, says he, as some children always remain pygmies, whose infant limbs have been too closely confined, thus our tender minds, fettered by the prejudices and habits of a just servitude, are unable to expand themselves, or to attain that well-proportioned greatness which we admire in the ancients, who, living under a popular government, wrote with the same freedom as they acted. This diminutive stature of mankind, if we pursue the metaphor, was daily sinking below the old standard, and the Roman world was indeed peopled by a race of pygmies, when the fierce giants of the north broke in and mended the puny breed. They restored a manly spirit of freedom, and after the revolution of 10 centuries, freedom became the happy parent of taste and science. Every barrier of the Roman constitution had been levelled by the vast ambition of the dictator. Every fence had been extirpated by the cruel hand of the triumvir. After the victory of Actium, the fate of the Roman world depended on the will of Octavianus, surnamed Caesar by his uncle's adoption, and afterwards Augustus by the flattery of the Senate. The conqueror was at the head of 44 veteran legions, conscious of their own strength and of the weakness of the constitution, habituated during 20 years civil war to every act of blood and violence, and passionately devoted to the house of Caesar, from whence alone they had received and expected the most lavish rewards. The provinces, long oppressed by the ministers of the Republic, sighed the government of a single person, who would be the master, not the accomplice, of those petty tyrants. The people of Rome, viewing with a secret pleasure the humiliation of the aristocracy, demanded only bread and public shows, and were supplied with both by the liberal hand of Augustus. The rich and polite Italians, who had almost universally embraced the philosophy of Epicurus, enjoyed the present blessings of ease and tranquillity, and suffered not the pleasing dream to be interrupted by the memory of their old tumultuous freedom. With its power, the Senate had lost its dignity. Many of the most noble families were extinct. The republicans of spirit and ability had perished in the field of battle or in the proscription. The door of the assembly had been designedly left open for a mixed multitude of more than 1,000 persons who reflected disgrace upon their rank, instead of deriving honour from it. The reformation of the Senate was one of the first steps in which Augustus laid aside the tyrant and professed himself the father of his country. He was elected censor, and in concert with his faithful Agrippa, he examined the list of the senators, expelled a few members whose vices or whose obstinacy required a public example, persuaded near 200 to prevent the shame of an expulsion by a voluntary retreat, raised the qualification of a senator to about £10,000, created a sufficient number of patrician families, and accepted for himself the honourable title of Prince of the Senate, which had always been bestowed by the censors on the citizen the most eminent for his honours and services. But whilst he thus restored the dignity, he destroyed the independence of the Senate. The principles of a free constitution are irrecoverably lost when the legislative power is nominated by the executive. Amidst this confusion of sentiments, the answer of the Senate was unanimous and decisive. They refused to accept the resignation of Augustus. They conjured him not to desert the Republic, which he had saved. After a decent resistance, the crafty tyrant submitted to the orders of the Senate, and consented to receive the government of the provinces and the general command of the Roman armies under the well-known names of proconsul and imperator. But he would receive them only for 10 years. Even before the expiration of that period, he hoped that the wounds of civil discord would be completely healed.